This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hey, ladies, listen, I am so excited that you're here. I don't know if you've noticed, but there are a lot of podcasts, and it's an honor for me to be inside your ears today. I know you have choices, lots of podcasts. I am super pumped to let you hear this conversation today with Lindsay Gerst. Before we get started though, I'm excited to share the sponsor of this week's episode, the Easter Story Egg. So my friend, she's so creative. Her name is Natalie Ard. She was on episode 65 and she came up with the Star From Afar. You probably remember that because her kids were super scared of the elf on the shelf. Plus she wanted Christmas, you know, to be more centered on Jesus and less about elves. But listen, there's no judgment for elf on the shelf people, Santa people. In our close group of friends, we have people who are no Santa families and we have pro Santa families. In our house, I use those Santa filters that make it seem like Santa was in your house because it freaks my kids out. But then if they ask if he's real, I say no, but then they get a present from Santa. It's all very confusing. I'm jocking my kids up. I'm pretty confident. So we all parent differently. Do you know what I'm saying? And you know what? I think we can all get along. Like, I think we all love our kids and we're all good people. I think we can do this, you guys. So anyhow, she made the Star From Afar. You can get that at stores all over the place. But then also she, this year, had another great idea, and her latest product is launching called the Easter Story Egg. So it comes with 7 wooden nesting eggs. They like sit inside of each other and they're literally adorable. Plus you get a book that it takes you through the 7 days of the Holy Week. So you start on Palm Sunday and you end on Easter. So you do one a day, or you do it all at once. Like, I don't really think Natalie's watching us to see how we do it. That's a lot to manage, and I don't think that she's doing that. So I believe that we have freedom to do it however we want. But they're really cute. They're wooden. The story's already done for you. So even if you feel like, I don't even really know the Easter story, what's happening? Where's the bunny? Why is there no bunny? You know. So head to starfromafar.com and get yours ordered today so that you can have one in time for Easter. Okay, so this episode today is really important. It's really just the first part of what you need to do this week. I try not to be too bossy with you guys, but I just need to be a little bit bossy right now. Being a new mom is every single kind of intense. We know that. Some of you are there now, but some of you are past it, thankfully, and your kids are kind of doing things on their own now. But this episode is for all of us. It's about postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis. And if it's not discussed, if it's not diagnosed properly, it gets babies killed, it gets moms killed. It's just terrible. I know this episode is going to help some women realize what's been happening to them right now. I know that it's going to prompt the rest of you, though, to ask some questions to and have a closer look at new moms in your life to see how they're really doing. So first, listen to this interview, and next, I need you to rent the documentary that she talks about. It is riveting, and I've never even been pregnant before, but I could not stop watching it. And if you've been listening to this show for a while, and actually this week I met a girl at church named Amy. Hi, Amy. And she said she was struggling one day, and she just put in iTunes, struggling mom, and the show came up, and it was my very first episode with Brina. And bless her heart, she has been listening ever since that very rough beginnings of this podcast. And I know that if you've been listening for any amount of time, you like it because me and my guests are freakishly honest. This documentary is going to be right up your alley and it could save somebody's life. All the links that you need are at momstrugglingwell.com. So enjoy this. Please pay attention. It's really important.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you see me?
No.
Because I'm not even wearing makeup or anything.
Yeah, okay.
Besides me looking awful, I'd love to be able to.
Well, do you?
But I can see you.
Do you see where there's a video camera?
Yeah.
Oh, there you are.
Hello.
Hi. How are you? So funny.
How are you doing?
I'm good. You're still a beautiful blonde from Southern California. So
no,
that's just what it is. I'm a Texan who's been digging in the dirt.
Yeah, no, I like literally, we got in at 10 o'clock last night from New York. And then, you know, I have my son and my parents are here. And I'm just like, oh.
So many things happening.
So many things happening.
So are you done like promoting it?
No, we're just starting.
Oh, man.
We're just starting. And, you know, I think this film, it's going to be a really long process because most mental health films, they don't really get this chance to get these legs. And I think that we have because of Brooke being attached to it and hopefully because the film speaks for itself, too.
It does.
Thank you. But I want to keep going until it gets in every hand possible.
I love it. That's so good.
Yeah. We have to.
It is so important. We tried talking at 6 a.m. yesterday, and I don't ever talk to anybody at 6 a.m. And that's how important I felt like this just was.
So, thank you so much.
Yeah. So tell me, what got all this started for you? I know your story because I watched the film, but...
Yeah. Well, for me, I struggled for so long. You know, obviously in the film, it says I had postpartum depression for about 6 years. And
I did not know it could last that long.
Postpartum depression can just turn into regular old depression, but you're a mom. So, you know, it's postpartum depression and just doesn't go away unless you get the proper help. And I thought I was getting help, but I wasn't getting the right help.
Did you have a history of depression or mental health, anything before kiddos?
I did.
Okay.
So I had a history of depression. I was severely depressed since I was 19.
Okay.
And I had to go on medication at age 19. And I think before that, I was pretty depressed too.
Okay.
I think I started having OCD at age 5. And my mom took me to a therapist at age 6. And at the time, it was just, you know, in the 80s, it was just like play therapy and it didn't do anything.
And okay.
And so I struggled my whole life. And then finally at age 19, I was in college in Boulder, Colorado. And I woke up one day and I was just not okay. I was in like this full-blown panic attack and I couldn't get out of it. And I thought I went crazy. And I went to this student psychologist because I didn't have any money. And,
right.
And she's like, I think you might be schizophrenic. And I was like, oh my God, like my whole world just fell apart.
Yeah, and she's a student, so she don't know nothing either. Shoot.
Yeah, so she misdiagnosed me and gave me the wrong medication.
Oh my God.
And so I went into this downward spiral and I had to leave college in Boulder and move back home to Miami. And I was in bed for about 6 months. And
oh my gosh.
My parents took me to this amazing doctor. And after a few tries, I think it was Zoloft that got me stabilized.
Okay.
And then I was able to go back to school, finish, and I started working. I had my dream job. It was everything was amazing. I was moved out to California to work. And I remember the first year the medication stopped working. Zoloft stopped working. And I went into this downward spiral again. So I went back home. I told my employers that I had a mono.
Okay.
So I was taking a month leave.
There's such a stigma. I hate it.
Yeah. I couldn't even tell them anything. It wasn't even on my mind to tell them anything.
Okay.
So I went home and I went to the doctor and I got stabilized on Celexa, and I was on Celexa from that age through my pregnancy.
Okay. Tell me the difference then between the things you dealt with before. How is that different than postpartum depression? Because you have a history, like, you know, it needs to be managed. So it's not like this was completely blindsiding you, except that it still did.
Yeah. The difference is you have a baby and a family to take care of. And what happened was I was completely stabilized. And when I got pregnant, my OCD and anxiety went out of control. And it was a nightmare. I think I would sit there all day. And if I didn't feel the baby kick, I would have like a chocolate chip cookie first. And then I would feel him move a little bit, but not enough. So then I would call and get an emergency ultrasound.
Okay.
And I think I did that about 20 times through my pregnancy. And that should have given my doctor a heads up that something wasn't right, but it didn't.
What do you do about medication while you're pregnant? My kids are all adopted, so I don't know.
How many kids do you have?
2.
Medication, I stayed on Celexa. Celexa is totally safe.
Okay.
Yeah, there's nothing that says that it's not okay. You could breastfeed on it.
Okay.
There's a group of medications that are safe to stay on
it. But your hormones are changing, so it doesn't necessarily still work.
Right. So obviously something wasn't working, but I was seeing my psychiatrist the entire pregnancy.
Who was not a student, I hope.
Not a student. But towards the end of my pregnancy, she said, well, I just want to let you know I'm retiring.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I'm like, awesome. But I have, you know, a colleague that I think is great for you.
Okay. Were they?
Okay. No. So I went to her colleague, and it was this man that knew nothing about maternal mental health or babies or anything. He had just been doing it for a long time. So he said, listen, I got you. You're stabilized now. We'll take it day by day. So I think you saw in the film that my delivery was
traumatic. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very, very traumatic. So I was induced. And the thing about being induced when you have a history of depression is that it's not a smart thing to do.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
No, because Pitocin, it's a harsh drug. And there's been studies that have said that Pitocin can lead to postpartum depression.
I did not know that.
So I didn't know that either.
Wow.
My doctor didn't know that.
Your doctor didn't know that?
My doctor didn't know that because she agreed to have me induced. I didn't need to be induced. There was no medical reason why I had to be induced.
But you wanted to be with your same doctor, right? Isn't that why?
Uh-huh. Okay. She was going out of town on my due date, and I wanted her to deliver the baby because she's who I know. And then when you have such bad anxiety at the time, you just want what's familiar. So we scheduled my inducement, and just everything went wrong. I think it was 38 hours that I was waiting, and the doctor kept going back and forth from her office to see her patients to come to me, I think maybe twice throughout the 38 hours. And the third time she came back, she's like, we got to do it. So she broke my water, and then I started going, and then the baby got stuck. He got stuck under my pubic bone.
Yeah.
So you would think that at that moment, they would say, this girl and this baby have been through enough. Let's do a C-section. Nobody said that.
Okay. Would you have preferred that? Some moms really don't want to have that.
I did not want to have it, but it's kind of like looking back, what would have been the better thing to do?
Okay.
And I think it would have been less traumatic for myself and my son.
Yeah.
If we did, but we didn't. I did 6 hours of pushing and he got stuck. And then so my doctor couldn't deliver him because she had never delivered a baby that's been stuck under the pubic bone.
After all that to get her, then wow.
Yeah. So they called in the head of her practice. He came in and did forceps and an episiotomy.
Ow.
And then all of a sudden I look up and every single medical student is there watching.
Oh,
this doctor do this to me. I'm looking around, my husband's yelling, get out of the room. And I was like, I don't care, just get the baby out. And the problem with pushing for 6 hours or 6.5 hours is that the pain is so tremendous. So they kept giving me pain medicine. I don't know how good that is for a baby to get that much pain medicine. For me, it was wearing off every 10 minutes. So every 10 minutes, the pain would just be so brutal.
Wow.
And then they'd have to give it again and again. When my son finally came out, they had to call code blue on him because he was so just in shock from what he just went through.
And that makes you more anxious. Like, what's wrong with my baby?
I had no idea what was going on. I was lying on the bed and they were sewing me up. And I hope this is okay to talk about.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. Well, and I'm a nurse, so I don't care. I mean, it doesn't gross me out is what I mean. Not, I don't care.
Yeah. So they're sewing me up and all the doctors are surrounding Hunter and that's my son. You know, finally they said he's fine, but he didn't cry for 2 hours.
Oh my God.
They took him away and I didn't see him for a little bit. And then my husband called me so I could hear him crying and they did all the stuff that they were supposed to do. And I went into the room and I was okay for a couple days in the hospital.
Okay. And then when did you know, hold it, something's not right?
So 2 days in the hospital, obviously I didn't sleep very well. They took Hunter to the nursery to give me time and they were taking care of him. And then they would bring him in at 5 a.m. So I'd be up at 5 a.m. and I would be trying to breastfeed and do everything. Then when we went home with smiles on our face. And in the car ride, we took pictures and everything was lovely. And Hunter was crying and we were happy and we were just glad that it was all over. And then the first night at home, he was pretty much up all night and I didn't sleep. And my parents were in town and they were sitting on the couch downstairs and I went downstairs and I sat there and I was holding Hunter and I look up at my mom and it was just this moment that's like this kind of nightmare that takes over you. And it was just like, yeah, I got it. I got it. And this is going to be painful because it reminded me of what I went through when I was 19, except you also have a baby to take care of and you have a husband that needs you and you have a household and you have all these responsibilities now. And it started off this kind of tragic story that was a long road to recovery.
Okay. So in the documentary it says they just kind of lost years where they literally don't remember anything. And you had a box that you went through and you don't remember the things in the box.
The box thing, it was really interesting because as a producer too for the film and a low-budget documentary, you don't really plan what you're going to do.
Mm.
It's kind of just like, you know what? We hired the cameraman for today. Let's see what we can do.
And by the way, it did not seem low-budget at all. It was beautiful.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. So I had this box and I was like, I want to go through the box and I want to do it for the first time on camera. And so Jamie Lynn, the director, and myself, you know, we brought the cameraman and I opened it up and I didn't even show the amount of emotions that were going on inside of me when I opened up that box to the camera. I mean, like when I found that letter that I wrote to my son the day before he was born, I didn't even remember it. And like reading that was so overwhelming and seeing pictures from the last 6 years of me smiling and holding him and I'm like, was that real? Did that really happen? Like, did I have fun at his first birthday party? Because I don't remember it. And I remember just misery. So why was I smiling? And there was a lot of people there. And wow, I was able to put that birthday party on. And
wow.
Okay. It's a really interesting kind of revelation when you go through such memories that you don't remember.
And then someone said that they felt like it was like looking at their child, but there was like a pane of glass between their child, like they couldn't experience. I have a history of depression, and so I get that about my life in general, because I see that I'm blessed. I see that God has been so good to me, my goodness, but I don't feel good feelings about it.
I think there's this sense of disassociation that happens. And I know that, you know, to this day, I suffer from disassociation. And my son has become the only person that I'm able to really feel with.
Really?
Which is really interesting, because I didn't have that for so long. I was kind of just going through the movements and the motions. And, you know, Shannon, my doula, is the one that said that in the film. She said it's kind of like this pane of glass. It really is a good analogy. It's you don't feel like you're able to really be there with them.
Enter in.
Yeah. You're here, but you don't feel it.
Yeah. So how did it become a thing you could do with your son?
Somehow I took on everything that I went through. Sorry, I have to look down because I have tears rolling down, coming down my eyes right now. But I had to kind of say to myself when he was a baby that, like, there's nothing more important to me than this boy growing up knowing that his mother loves him so much. Because I didn't know what kind of mother I would be because, you know, I'm mentally ill. So I really took it upon myself to make sure I was there every second, every moment, almost to this obsessive state where I had to do everything for him and I had to be there. But as he started getting older, I started having these amazing conversations with him. And it just so happened that he's this genius, amazing child that has the soul of a 90-year-old man that has been through like the most amazing life. He's so empathetic. And so he doesn't know everything that mommy went through, but he knows that mommy had a hard time. And I've done everything I can for him to know that mommy loves him and is there for him no matter what.
Yeah.
There's many times where I'm exhausted and need to lie down, especially when he was really young.
How old is he now?
He's almost 9.
Okay. With the OCD and the anxiety, how do you balance not making sure that you're always the one doing all the things, like you said, was your tendency? Because that's a common thing for moms.
Yeah. I think that lasted until he was in elementary school. And then, you know, like, I think I dropped him off for kindergarten and I was just kind of like sitting around all day waiting to hear from the teacher if his day was okay. And I was living for him. And then I started letting go a little bit when I saw him that he was okay and that he was making friends and he was doing well. But it was a struggle. And I still struggle to this day. I think about him all day when he's at school.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think there tends to be extremes because me, I'm like, go to school, goodbye. I am going to just really enjoy this. Like, I don't think about my kids when they're at school because I feel like they're fine. They're going to be fine. So I should be more concerned.
I want to be like you.
Oh, man. Those are the fastest hours of the whole day. It feels like 30 minutes.
I know, but it does feel like really short because especially making the film, I've been so busy and I've been traveling. And so it does. The day goes by so fast and then all of a sudden it's time for pickup. And for me, I have to drive him to school and I have to pick him up. So unless I'm in New York or in an interview, I'm going to be there because I want to see how his day was. I need to talk to his teacher. It's just the way I am.
And so good. With mental health having such a stigma, and the documentary is a fantastic job of talking about the shame that surrounds it, and it keeps us quiet because who on earth would ever want to think these terrible things about their baby, which some of the women in your show, I mean, I loved the words coming out of people's mouths that are going to bring freedom to so many moms who are feeling it anyway, and they don't think they could ever say it out loud. And even talking to the women who actually had killed their babies and the families who had experienced the mother killed themselves and the freedom that's going to come from all of this honesty.
It's inconceivable.
It is. So why did you come out of that?
I'll tell you, when we were making the film, I had no idea why. I knew that it was just something I needed to do and I was given the opportunity to do it. I think that if many people were given the opportunity, they would do it. And maybe they would say that they wouldn't. And there's some people that just want to hide and that's totally fine. That's their way of dealing with it. I never told anybody really while I was making the film that I was making the film. I mean, the only people that really knew were, you know, like my friends from my son's school and my family. You know, it was just like, we're going to make this film and we're going to help people. And I was just going along with the process. And, you know, you have hopes. But if I thought too much about it, then I think that it would hurt more. But towards the end, when we were finishing up and starting to get attention with it, I had this fear and I would wake up with a pit in my stomach every morning of like, people are actually going to see this film. This is my story. And I show myself getting electric therapy on my head. And like, my ex-boyfriend's going to see it. And he's going to be so glad he didn't marry me. And, you know, it's like, you think that stuff. And at the end of the day, I decided to let the stigma go. And I just don't care anymore. I really don't.
So good.
Because you know what? We started this Facebook page and you see all these women and husbands of women suffering. And they're like, thank you so much for making this. And so far, some of the people that have seen the film, all we've heard is thank you and like can relate. And that's the reason why I made it. Like, okay.
Well, I'm going to tell you, a friend of mine, she has several children in a row real quickly. And she's so happy. Like there's nothing in her behavior that would make me think this would be something she would deal with. And so I said, you know what? It's really strange. But as I was watching the show on postpartum depression, you popped into my head and I just wanted to ask you how you're doing. And she was like, never with any other baby, but with this baby. I have had the darkest days of my life and I didn't even know how to explain what was happening because this isn't something I deal with, right? Like you and me who have a history of depression, we know the word. Like we know when we're there, we know how to tell people, we know who to tell, but she had no language for it and no history. And so this is so important to see so that you can even think to ask your friends who've just had babies.
This is not just a film for people that are suffering. This is a film for literally every person in the world because we say in the film 1 in 5 new moms. It ranges between 1 in 5 and 1 in 7. But if it's 1 in 5 new moms that get a perinatal mood disorder, you know somebody that has it. Yeah. You have a granddaughter, you have a friend, you have a wife's friend. I mean, like anybody. And if you watch the film and you can learn the signs and you see somebody that has a new baby, like you have the chance to really help them and possibly save their life.
Yeah. I am a Christian and in the church, you're not supposed to have problems. You're supposed to just pray about it more and all that stuff. And that's a bunch of shenanigans. It's not accurate. And it's really
dangerous. You know what's interesting is one of the amazing women in the film, Vanessa, she is religious as well. And she wrote a book about her experience. And now she is the person in her church that people go to talk to about it. So if you have one person in your community, whether it's religious or not, that is open and speaking about it, more people are going to speak out and not necessarily worry about that religious aspect of it.
Yeah.
Postpartum depression doesn't discriminate, you know?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't matter what race you are, economics, anything.
Yeah, I love the whole thing. So my takeaway from the whole thing, and I loved the panel discussion you had at the end. I loved your husband's honesty. Bless him. Oh, what a sweet man. My takeaway from the whole thing is that you just need to share your story and that he, bless him, didn't know he had a story. And I loved that on camera, he realized, oh my gosh, I went through something too. As the spouse of someone.
Yeah, you know, I think for the husband, if their wife is suffering, they're supposed to be the ones to take care of them. But who's taking care of the husband? He was just struggling and he gained so much weight and he was so depressed and he would have like bouts of anger and aggression and it didn't help me. So if he got help earlier, then maybe I could have been helped earlier. But since he didn't know, he was just kind of living in his frustration and anger and sadness over not having the perfect young family that he expected.
Talk to me about how throughout the film you try something, it didn't work, or it had some effect, but not as much as you had hoped. And so you were persistent in finding new things. Talk to me about that for a woman who, you know, she got on some medicine, but she just still, something's not quite right. How did you know where to go next? How did you know it was time to go? How did you know you weren't just needing to try harder?
Well, I think after 6 years and then talking about my story in the beginning, I realized that I don't have to live like this. You know, I just was never happy and never in a place where I felt content and happy just to be a new mom or even a mom of a 6-year-old. Every day was misery and my marriage was falling apart. And I would wake up and drop him off at school and come home and get in bed and sleep until I had to pick him up. And you realize that this is not a way to live. I don't think I realized that until I started the film. Because it's very easy because when you're not in that awful pain, but in like wherever land, you're just kind of like, oh, okay, well, at least I'm not suffering so much, so I can do this. But is that a way to really live?
Yeah, no quality of life.
And that's why I say in the film also, it's like you never know what somebody's going through by just looking at them. Because somebody can be okay and they could put makeup on their face and be fine and walking out, but that's, you know, that doesn't mean anything. So I think it was an easy decision to show the journey of going through the different therapies and everything in this film. I wasn't going to stop until I found the right thing that worked for me. You know what's really helping me now is exercise. It really is. I mean, look, I'm somebody that has to be on medication for the rest of my life. It's just the way my brain chemistry works. But the medicine, it stabilizes me. But some people can take medication and feel like they're on cloud 9 and they're so happy. And I admire them. For me, it doesn't work like that. And so I need a little extra. So every day I have a plan and I go to therapy and I take my medication and I exercise. And because of the disassociation, I try to take deep breaths and feel, you know, walk in nature. And one of my biggest therapies is spending time with my son, just connecting.
What do you do that helps you connect with him?
We have really good conversations.
Okay.
He's this unique little angel and we just sit and talk, and he's gotten into drawing. So we draw together and we write together and we create these stories, and yeah, we go on these little journeys together. And when I watch him play with his friends, it just, you know, fills my heart up and I enjoy it.
What do you do to connect with your husband? You guys were both going through a trauma at the same time, but like kind of individually.
Yeah. My husband and I just celebrated our 10-year wedding anniversary and it took 10 years to connect.
Wow.
So okay. I'm not sure how we made it to 10 years, but we did. So now that we're connecting, we're going to really work hard in it. But my husband and I made sure, and I think this is really important, that even through the hard times, we had date night. And no matter how I was feeling mentally or how he was doing, we made sure that we had time together. So every Saturday night, we have a babysitter since he was a baby. And it's been the same babysitter.
And so good.
And we go out and spend some time together or go out with friends, and we try to connect that way. I think it's really important to set time together, even if you don't feel like it, even if, you know, you're too tired or like you're mad at them that day, have your time, because if you don't connect, then it's not going to work.
Yeah. I have always been really bad at that.
A lot of parents, it's hard. They, you know, they're like, wow, I can't go out. I don't have any time. I have the kids to take care of. Yeah. I have this to do. I have work. I have this, you know, I want to relax when I have extra time. But I really do think that alone time with your spouse is so important.
Yeah. What do you think has changed this recently that's made you guys start to connect? Is it that you guys are, this is starting to be in your rearview mirror, this whole trauma years?
I haven't thought about that, but I do think with the film coming out, and I think he's really proud, and I think he's kind of taken a step back and let go of some of the anger, because he was really angry with me for so long, you know, like I caused him a lot of pain. I mean, not on purpose, but I caused him a lot of pain. So I think he's starting to let go and he's in therapy. And I think we just started being more open with each other. It's hard. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Oh my gosh. It is. Kids are a lot of work. Marriage is a lot of work.
And for our 10-year wedding anniversary, I had these hats made, and the front said 10 years and the back said, "We did it," with an exclamation point. Like, we did it. Like, that's crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
If a marriage can last these last 10 years, I think we're good.
I would agree.
And if not, it was a great accomplishment.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so how can people find the documentary? How's it being distributed?
Yeah, we have an amazing distribution company called Gravitas Ventures. So it's going to be international, but right now it could be rented or purchased on iTunes. And there's a couple of movies called When the Bell Breaks, but we're the only documentary. So make sure you look for the woman crying on the front of instead of the other one.
First of all, the title and the picture. I felt it. And again, I've never been pregnant, but I was like, oh, this needs to be told.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I mean, so it can be seen on all VOD platforms. And then it's also going international, where every day we kind of get new information. And then we have some stuff coming up that's really exciting that we'll share soon.
I love it. Well, thank you for, I mean, really putting yourself out there.
You know what? Thank you so much, because I could put it out there, and if nobody watches it, then it won't make a difference. So it's really important to things like this. So yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And I'll put a link to the Facebook and a link to where they can get it on iTunes.
Yeah.
Any other links of where?
There's our website, which is whenthebellbreaksfilm.com, and you could sign up to get updates or screenings, you know, request a screening, and it has some more information on there that we don't bear on the Facebook page as well. Our Facebook is a great community too. Like, we post stories and people share their own story and battle with postpartum depression or psychosis. It's a great place to go and just really don't feel alone in your struggle, because I think that's the biggest thing, is that people don't want to open up because they feel like people are going to think they're crazy. Mm-hmm. You're not. It's very common, and you're going to get better.
Yes. Yes. So I was going to ask you, what would you say to a woman battling with this? But maybe that's it.
It really is. Like, speak up. You can get better. You're not going to live in this. And literally 1 in 5. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of mommies. Find a support group. I co-lead a support group in Santa Monica. And it's amazing, the women that come and open up and just are so glad that they have other people to connect with.
Yes. Yeah. So good. Okay. So I have one question I end all my shows with. And I was going to ask you, what can you, just in general, not about this particularly, but what can you not stop talking about right now? Do you have a product or a...
Do you have something?
Okay. Tell me. It always comes to people quickly because they literally can't stop talking
about it. I'm obsessed with Latisse. Have you ever heard of Latisse?
No.
Okay. Latisse is this thing that you put on your eyelashes. And like, as I got older, my eyelashes totally went away, and you put it on your eyelashes and they grow.
So it's not
a liquid.
An extension.
No, it's a liquid. It's a liquid. Okay. Because for people like me, you know, like I'm aging. I'm going to be 43. And
we're like, old, sister.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, so like to have eyelashes, like I'm obsessed with Latisse right now.
And it really
works. It works. Yeah.
Do you put it on the bottom or just the top?
You could put it on both. I just put it on my top. But when you when I have mascara on, my lashes are like, they're so long. Oh yeah.
So when you stop putting it on, do they like what happens?
Yeah, you can't stop putting it on.
you can
never stop putting it on. They'll stop growing. But you could start doing it, like I do it every night, but you could start doing like twice a week when they get really long.
Okay. And how long did it take for it to grow?
A couple months. And then you have these real long eyelashes. Wait, what's yours? What's your thing?
Oh my gosh, I never have an answer for this. What can I not say? Well, I got nothing right now. I am in the middle of making a pirate birthday party for my son. So I cannot stop talking about pirates, which is so sad. What is my life?
No, but you know what? That's the best thing about being a mom is you have to laugh at the little things, you know?
It's true.
Like, what is my life? Oh my God, I'm making pirate little mini sandwiches. Okay.
Oh, this isn't what I thought it would be like, but no, it's super fun. So yeah, thank you so much. Just a gem.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yes. All right, ladies, I am so thankful that Lindsay went first and brought her junk to the light. We all have junk, you guys. I'm confident that it brought some serious freedom to some of you to hear her put words to what's been going on in your head. So we always end each episode with a strategy to struggle well for the week. If we don't do something with what we've heard, we're just wasting our time. So your first, not optional, I'm being bossy, strategy to struggle well this week is to rent the documentary When the Bow Breaks. Just trust me. And I know you don't know me, but I promise I'm a very trustworthy stranger. So that's the mandatory one. I'm going to call you this week and see if you did it. Okay, so expect a phone call from me like I have time. I don't even call my mom enough. Sorry, Mom. So here are some other optional strategies to struggle well based on what Lindsay said. If what you talked about is what you've been living, please get yourself in to see a doctor. Like, call them today. You matter. You are not always going to feel this way, and this is not the end of your story, so get yourself some help. If you know somebody who just had a baby, maybe if you even don't even know them that well, just ask them how they're doing, like how they're really doing, and tell them about the documentary. Even if they say they're doing fine, people are liars. Okay, so another strategy to struggle well, maybe if you have part of your story that you've believed is too shameful to share, maybe not related to postpartum depression, but some struggle, I would encourage you to do the brave thing like Lindsay did and go first. Share what God has brought you through and give the gift of hope to somebody who is in that same mess right now. I'm not saying you need to start a podcast or a blog. Just send someone a text message. Pull somebody aside at an event and just share with them what you wish you knew when you were in the middle of it. Before we go, though, I wanted to remind you again to head to startfromafar.com to get your Easter story egg. You'll be starting a new family tradition. You'll be supporting a small business that's run by a mom just like you. Also, if you are a mom with a small business, I would love to talk to you about being a sponsor. There is a couple spots left, but they're filling up fast, and I would really love to share what you're up to with my listeners. Please come find the Mom Struggling Well community on Instagram at Mom Struggling Well. Find show notes and ways to support the show at momstrugglingwell.com. And as always, before shopping on Amazon, don't just type in amazon.com. First type in momstrugglingwell.com/Amazon and you'll get right to Amazon, but you'll also be supporting the show with your purchase at no additional cost to you. Ladies, being a mom is hard work. It is a beating of a job, but it's also, as you well know, so important and life-changing as well. All this hidden work that we're doing matters so much more than we will ever even see the sight of heaven. We can do this. We kind of don't have a choice, but we can do it. And we do have a choice how well to do it and who we depend on. Have a great week of struggling well.